Vaidaber Adonai El Moshe Lemar Daber El Bnei Yisrael Vikhuli Teruma Meis Kol Ish Asher Yidvenu Libo Tikhu Es Teruma Si. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, speak to the children of Israel, and let them take for me a portion from every man whose heart motivates him. You shall take my portion. Dot, dot, dot. V'osu li mikdash v'shochanti b'socham. They shall make a sanctuary for me, so that I may dwell among them. Dot, dot, dot. Vayehi divar Adonai el Shlomo lemor habayis hazeh asher ata voneh im telech b'chukosai v'yes mishpatai ta'aseh v'shomarta es kol mitzvosai l'oleches bahem v'hakimosi es devori itoch asher dibarti el David avicha v'shachanti b'soch b'nei Yisrael v'lo e'ezov es ami Yisrael. The word of Hashem came to Shlomo, saying, this temple that you build, if you follow my decrees, perform my statutes, and observe my commandments to follow them, then I shall uphold my word with you that I spoke to David your father. I shall dwell among the children of Israel, and I shall not forsake my people Israel.
OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Teruma. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, the second day, that's Thursday, the second day of the month of Adar Aleph, Adar Rishon, 5776, corresponding to February 11th, which, just for those of you who studied American history in school, George Washington was born on February 11th. OC, the old calendar, which was in vogue in 1732 when he was born, which I remember only because it's the square root of 3, 1.732 and more. And then, in the 1750s, when 11 days were added to the calendar, his birthday became the 22nd of February. And then, when President's Day became a national holiday, linking Lincoln's birthday and Washington's birthday, and on a Monday always, then the date floats. But he was really born on February 11th, OC, or February 22nd, new calendar, known as the Gregorian calendar. But enough of that calendar. Let me talk about our calendar, because we have just started the month of the first of two Adars. I will get back to that after we say Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim k'raticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, Tihyena oznecha kashuvot lakol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai miya amod. Ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivarei. Kiviti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mishomerim laboker shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara v'ashivya ha'omedim mebein bayam ובין ביבשה, המקום ירחם עליהם ויוציאם מצרה לירווחה, ומאפלה לאורה, ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב, ונאמר אמן. Okay, let's start. The music that opened the show was just a little teaser. It's the part of the intro to a song which I will play shortly. How shortly, I don't know yet. It's ready, but I'm not ready to let it roll because it is Sheyibana Beit HaMikdash, which will be the main discussion or presentation that I will make for Parshat Terumah. But I do want to talk about the Shana Me'uberet issue so that people get a review of that topic. I would say that many of the listeners know how the fixed calendar that we have works, or the Jewish calendar in general, but for those listening who might not know, I would like to review the issue of the Shana Me'uberet, the pregnant year carrying an extra month. The Torah mandates that our calendar, month to month, follow the cycle of the moon. It takes approximately 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, and a little more for the moon, on average, to go through its phases from what's called no moon to the following no moon, from one molad to the next. Since a month can't be a certain number of days and a fraction of a day, the result of that is that Jewish months are either 29 days or 30. And not going to get into how they work pattern-wise, but let's leave it first a statement that the months follow roughly the average time it takes the moon to go through its phases, a little more than 29 and a half days. 29 and a half days exactly would give a lunar year of 12 months, 12 times 29 and a half is 354, if I am not mistaken. Maybe I am, so let me calculate it. Yes, that is correct. I don't know why I hesitated. 354 days, sometimes 353, more often 355, balances out to a little bit more than the 354 average of a 12-month lunar year. Now, if we were like the Muslim calendar, which follows only the pattern of the moon, the cycle of the moon, then that would be the end of the story. But the Torah also mandates that Pesach be in the spring, and that Sukkot be in the fall. The seasons of the year depend upon the cycle of the earth revolving around the sun, the earth with the moon going around the sun. That's known as a solar year, which is approximately 365 and a quarter days, which means that a solar year is a little more than 11 days longer than a lunar year. 11 days, 2 years 22 days, 3 years 33 days. So by 3 years into a cycle, we add an extra month of 30 days. We make that month a second Adar. That's also mandated because the main goal of the extra month is to rectify the position of Pesach in the spring. The result of adding an extra month postpones Nisan and Pesach in it a month later and pushes it more into the spring. Otherwise, it would recede into the winter and then eventually into the fall and then the summer, and it would float around the whole year in the course of a couple of years. And that's not acceptable based on the Torah's requirement of Pesach being the spring festival. In the time of Sanhedrin, past and future, there was a committee of judges of Sanhedrin who would study the astronomy necessary and weather conditions and agricultural conditions and engineering of the roads and bridges for the influx of people coming to Yerushalayim for Pesach. And without going into the whole thing, a set of priorities would determine when an extra month were to be added, and that decision was announced to the public in Adar, basically saying the coming month will not be Nisan, as you might have expected. It'll be Adar again. In our fixed calendar, we have a pattern of 7 years out of a 19-year cycle. When an extra month is added, the cycle is unfailing. It's the 19-year cycle, the third year, 6, 8, 11, 14, 17, and 19. In other words, 3, 3, 2, 3, 3, 3, 2 years. And there are no other factors that are taken into account as the Sanhedrin would if it were sitting today. So this year, we knew way in advance, happens to be the 19th year of the current 304th lunar cycle since creation. Once this year is finished, 304 complete cycles have been finished, and then the following year is the beginning of the 305th lunar cycle. That's pretty much the way it works. There's a question which needs to be explored. It's either academic or, in some cases, it's an actual serious issue, and that is, which is the real Adar? On the one hand, logic would indicate that the real Adar is the second one. I'm sorry, the first one, because that started as the Adar that followed Shavat, and then there's another one added after it. In fact, there are some authorities who say the first Adar is the real one. On the other hand, because of another rule that Purim and Pesach must be 1 month apart, the main features of Adar are shifted to the second Adar, Purim and Shushan Purim, Ta'anit Esther, Parshat Shkalim, Parshat Zachor, Parshat Parah, Parshat HaChodesh, all move to the second Adar. When you're looking at the second Adar and the first Adar, it's very hard to say that the first one is the real one and the second one is only an addition because of all the things that are in it. So this remains a dispute. Now, what are the practical implications and ramifications of this dispute? A boy who was born during a regular Adar and 13 years later, in his bar mitzvah year, there are two Adars. In which Adar does he become a bar mitzvah? Basically, the decision is he's got to hedge his bets, meaning we don't allow him to read the Torah in shul or to get an aliyah until his birth date in the second Adar. On the other hand, we require him to wear tefillin on his birth date in the first Adar. So pretty much it looks like a case for the second Adar, and the first picks up, a couple of points there. On another end of life. What about a yahrzeit? A person died in a regular Adar. I'll use my mother, Aleha Shalom, as an example. She died on the 19th of Adar in a Shana Peshuta, a regular one Adar 12-month year. This year, her 18th yahrzeit, is coming up Yud Tet 19 Adar. Which Adar? That's a good question. Now, yahrzeits are saying Kaddish, lighting a candle, learning, usually Mishnayot, in memory and Le'ilui Nishmat, the one who passed away. And many people have a custom of fasting on the yahrzeit of a parent. So which is it, the first Adar or the second Adar? It probably will come as no surprise to many of you that there is a dispute. Some say the first Adar, some say the second Adar for a yahrzeit. Some say both, because we're not sure in which one. The halachic sources are a little bit more generous when it comes to fasting. And it says those who have that custom should fast in the first one. On the other hand, others say in the second one. And only one authority recommends fasting in both, provided you can handle fasting. Not everybody can. A person knows by his experiences on the regular fast days whether or not he can really handle a fast day. If he cannot, and that is the custom, he takes one of the days. And if he can handle it, he fasts on both. My brothers and I decided that we would follow the opinion of fasting on both days. And my father, Zichrono Livracha, helped out the situation by passing away on Chanukah, on which you're not allowed to fast. So we end up fasting in some years twice on my mother's yahrzeit and not at all in any year for my father's yahrzeit. But that's the way it works. This does not necessarily mean that to be taken as a proof of the real Adar. There are issues besides that, so we leave all of those questions open. The only one that I don't want to leave open is the concept of simcha. Misha nichnas Adar, marbim b'simcha. When Adar enters, we increase joy. And there is a dispute whether that applies only to the Adar with Purim in it, or to the Adar with Purim in it and Nisan that follows with Pesach, since Pesach's following Purim is really what gives the Simcha to Adar, or it includes Adar Rishon. And in my opinion, since we're not talking about the boy's bar mitzvah or a yahrzeit, we're talking about being happy. Go for it. From yesterday, even the day before, be happy all the time, but especially during the months, plural, of Adar and the Nisan that follows. And each month takes care of itself and sometimes has reasons for joy and sometimes mixed with sorrow. But Adar, go for it. Now I think I'm ready to play the Sheyibana Beit HaMikdash. We'll talk a lot about it in the second half of the show, but this basically will bring us to the halfway mark. And what could I say? Misha nechnas Adar, marbim b'simcha. So enjoy the song, but think about the Beit HaMikdash as well.
Shayibone, in the hero, the Omen, Shayibone, the same for Kano beside a circle, the Shon Navot for the hero, Shayibone beside the Shayibone, in the hero, the Omen, Shayibone, the same for Kano beside a circle, the Shon Navot for the hero, Rahamon. חזיר לנו אבוי נס בייס המקדש אבוי נס בייס המקדש לי מקוימה הרחמון יחזיר לנו אבוי נס בייס המקדש ימירה ויומינו אמן
You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Teruma. I guess you couldn't tell that yet, except for the song. But I wanted to also usher in the Adars as I did. So now let's get into Teruma. And let me share with you, since I mentioned my parents, my father, Zichrono Livracha, used to ask a question mostly to kids, and I guess sometimes to adults too, just to see their reaction. Because it sounded like a question, but it's a difficult question to answer. He would ask, would you rather go to the city or by bus? So when you think about that for a moment, you laugh. It's a funny question. And over the years, I've been thinking about it in different contexts, and I find something very significant about the question, even if that's not what was meant. Let's analyze it for a moment. Would you rather go to the city? The city is a destination. Or by bus? Bus is a method of transportation. So you can go to the city by bus. It's not an either or. You could go to the city by car or by train. You can go to the country by bus or by car or by train. The two components of the either or of a question are supposed to be reasonable alternatives one to the other, and that's what makes this a funny question. But I got to thinking, and I will hopefully tie it very clearly in a moment with the Parsha. I got to thinking about the difference between the goal of going to the city, and it sometimes doesn't matter how you get there, or the enjoyment of a bus ride, if you like bus rides or a train ride or whatever, regardless of what your destination is. In other words, we're dealing with means and an end. So the question that I'm really leading into is, what do you think of mitzvot, commandments in general, and specifically the command to build a sanctuary to God? Let's not get yet to the sanctuary, also known as Mikdash, the first version Mishkan, usually translated as tabernacles, and Beit HaMikdash, the Holy Temple. Before we get there, let's take a look at a different mitzvah. Let's take a look at something relatively contained, the requirement to fast on Tisha B'Av. Not a small thing. It's a rabbinic command to fast on Tisha B'Av in commemoration of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Is fasting on Tisha B'Av the goal, which is accomplished by abstaining from eating and drinking for the entire 24-plus hour period? Or is there a goal which the fasting on Tisha B'Av is meant to facilitate? Namely, the thinking about the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and perhaps resolving certain things to improve in oneself and in one's Jewish society in order to go towards the final redemption. Now, the simplest answer is, well, both. But the question then becomes, what happens when they clash? Meaning, well, not yet clash, but let's talk first about the person who fasts on Tisha B'Av and spends the day watching movies on the internet. Not specific mood in movies that would be conducive for the thoughts of the day, but just diversion movies, 6 episodes of Star Wars or whatever, just because he's fasting and he's hungry, and this will keep his mind off of the fasting. Does that accomplish what Tisha B'Av is meant to accomplish? I would think most people would agree, no, it doesn't. Now, what about the person who feels that he can get into the topic of Tisha B'Av in a different way? He can pay a visit to the Temple Institute. I don't really know if it's open on Tisha B'Av, but let's say it is, and see the models and the vessels made for the next Beit HaMikdash and listen to a moving lecture and really feel as if mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash was accomplished on a personal level by him because he followed that visit to a visit to Yad Vashem, which is a monument to a devastating destruction in our time, which we do not separate from the whole process of exile and destruction. And the person was snacking all the way through because he doesn't like to fast. Now, I'm not talking about a person who has a physical condition that would preclude his fasting. There, halacha addresses the issue. But I'm talking about what do you do on Tisha B'Av? And the first part, I think, is easier. That is, just not eating and drinking is not the point of the day. It is definitely a means to achieve a goal. And sitting and watching movies all day or reading comic books or taking a 8-hour nap in the middle of the day is not what the day was meant to be. The second half of the question is a little tougher, and that is the mood that you could create and the introspection and the thinking and the pondering and the meditation. One can feel as if unnecessary to go through the physical motions of fasting when the point of the fasting is to bring the thought process and the feeling and emotions to a point where the person successfully reaches that on his own. I don't know if I lost you yet, but let's bring it back down. The answer is that a mitzvah, rabbinic mitzvah like fasting on Tisha B'Av, Torah mitzvot, are all, each and every one, a goal in and of itself. If the Torah commands a mitzvah, we are duty-bound to follow it. If the Torah issues a prohibition, we are duty-bound not to do what is forbidden. And that, in and of itself, is a goal. In addition, there is a goal, a greater goal, we'll call it, for the performance of mitzvot. But you can't claim to arrive at the goal at the expense of the mitzvah by doing things your own way. Now let's talk mikdash. V'asu li mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham, one of the psukim that I read in the beginning of the show. Make for me a sanctuary, and I will dwell among them, referring to the people of Israel. B'tocham. Famous comments by many of the commentators. The sentence would have finished differently if we were talking perhaps about a human king. Make for me a palace, and I will dwell in it. But that's not what it says, because we're not dealing with a physical human king. We're dealing with God. And when God says, make for me a sanctuary, it is not to be his abode and dwelling place, because the entire universe is his abode. It is meant as a task for us to bring God's presence among us. So that's the short of it. But now, specifically with Mikdash, we have to analyze it. I don't know if that's the best word. We have to examine it in light of the fact that it's been almost 1,950 years since the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, during which time the Jewish people around the world have managed to, A, commemorate and mark and show sorrow for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and to create situations and institutions which carry on the legacy of the Mikdash, like a shul, a synagogue, which is a Mikdash Ma'at. And there are many interesting corresponding ingredients to the temple and to a shul, and the home, and the heart. There's a song which I love, Bilavavi Mishkan Evna, in my heart I will build a tabernacle, a Mishkan, for God's honor. And I offer as a sacrifice on the altar in this mikdash in my heart, my soul. Beautiful song written by a Kabbalist back in the time of the Tzfat great Rabbonim. And as emotional and as beautiful as that song is, I believe one should not be lulled into the wrong mode of thinking that the purpose of the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash was to bring each individual Jew to a state where he can build a sanctuary to God in his own heart, and that's all. In other words, it's a goal, but it does not negate and does not push aside the actual fulfillment of this great mitzvah of V'asu li mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham. So as much as our lips have temporarily replaced the animals on the altar as sacrifices, we have not replaced them permanently. We replace them, first of all, prayer, whole discussion by itself. Prayer predates temple service. Prayer was there during temple service time and continued thereafter. I like to put it that prayer took on double duty after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, that not only was it prayer, but it also became a replacement of the animal sacrifices. But that does not mean to say, as some people want to suggest, that we are more sophisticated than the Jews were 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, and we don't need a temple with an altar with sacrifices. I don't accept that notion because the Torah commands the building of a mikdash, and because that mitzvah is eternal and is still pending and is not just a once upon a time, a long time ago thing. And that's something we have to think about. I've spoken on the show in the past about someone who was a family friend from way back. My grandfather was a friend of this fellow's, my father, and I became friendly with him too. I became a third generation Chernofsky to not only be friendly with this fellow, but to argue with him about religion for countless hours. He was of the opinion that mitzvot, specific detailed commandments, were necessary for most Jews to observe, but not himself, because he was convinced that the purpose of doing mitzvot was to become closer to God, and he became close to God his own way, and has a relationship so close with God that he doesn't need to wear tefillin every day, because tefillin are meant to bring you closer to God. He doesn't have to keep Shabbat, because Shabbat is meant to bring you closer to God, and he's already there. I don't know if I ever said poppycock to him, but I did argue at great length, and I believe it's the manifestation of a common error that mitzvot that we are commanded in the Torah are meant as means to achieve a certain goal. And that's all. And I believe very strongly that that's not all. Because mitzvot are not only the specific means, accept no alternatives, but they are goals in and of themselves of listening and following a royal decree. Now, I want to qualify something I just said. The idea of accept no substitutes might be so, but one can certainly work on strengthening his striving for a goal of spirituality, of sanctity, of kedusha, of whatever, in other ways. I boiled it down to a very simple illustration. Picture two guys who were on a hike in the wilderness. They got lost, and they were wandering in this area for 2-3 days. Their food supply ran out early. Their water supply ran out. And when they were finally rescued, they were suffering from dehydration, rushed to the hospital, and, thank God, brought back to normal health after due time. Now, they each felt a debt of gratitude to God, and they each intensified their feelings of the value of water. Dehydration is a serious reminder of how vital water is to our lives. Whereas before this happened, whenever they drank water, they would make the Shahakol Bracha, and it would be most often just rattled off and mumbled through. And now the appreciation for water as one of God's creations was so great that they composed a beautiful poem about water and determined to recite it when they're together, and even when they're not together, whenever they had water to drink. One of the guys took that poem and replaced the blessing for water. The other guy would make the bracha for water with more feeling than usual, take a sip, and then recite the poem. Or recite the poem first, then make the bracha, and then drink the water. Very similar fellows, but the first one, in my opinion, did a very wrong thing. He assumed that the blessing, blessed are you, God our God, King of the universe, that everything that exists came into existence because you said so, he found it inadequate to express his appreciation and his feeling for water, and he replaced it with a poem that he wrote. The second guy accepted the notion that our sages composed that bracha to be said whether or not you appreciate water, whether or not you appreciate it a lot or a little, and everybody says that. And he felt a need to recite that poem as well. To me, big, big difference. So whatever you want to make out of the Beit HaMikdash, whatever you want to say about how it infused synagogue service and the Jewish home and the Jewish heart and the striving and longing of the Jewish soul, that's wonderful. But the question is, will a temple be rebuilt? Absolutely yes. Will it function in pretty much the same way that it functioned when it stood previously? I believe with all my heart that the answer to that is yes as well. Will we have different attitudes? Probably. when the society in which you live was a society where animal sacrifices were commonplace, then participating in an animal sacrifice was one thing. In a society which it's not, it'll take getting used to, acclimating, but it's still part of the Torah and part of the mitzvot. And I think it'll have great meaning. Let me finish with what I consider to be a proof to what I've been saying. We are commanded on Mishkan and everything in it and the garments of the Kohen in these sedras of Truma and Tetzaveh. And that happened before the sin of the golden calf. Then, in the following seder of Kitisa, we have the sin of the golden calf, followed by the entire Mishkan again, because it is a goal, and it also is a means to achieve an end. On that note, Chodesh Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.